Where it's 8:33 on a Thursday morning. Hi, I'm Sam Fuqua, your co-host for this quarterly series of conflict resolution call-in programs, and conflict help for the holidays is our topic this morning. As always, my co-host Linda Newell, former state senator, with us by phone. Hi, Linda.
Hello, Sam. Hello, Barry. Thank you for joining us today.
Barry Erdman is in studio, who has been a semi-regular guest on these quarterly call-in programs, psychotherapist, licensed clinical social worker, been in practice in Boulder for some 35 years. And we've talked about this topic most years in December on KGNU because it's something that, for many of us, can bring up feelings, bring up issues, bring up conflicts when we start to think about our family gatherings. For some, that may have already happened with Thanksgiving. For others, it's approaching with the Christmas holiday. Maybe you gathered for Hanukkah earlier this month and there were some challenges. Well, we're here to talk about those and how to work through them with Barry Erdman and Linda Newell. And as always, it's a call-in program. So our phone number, 303-442-4242, and we'll open up the phones in just a few minutes. Linda?
Yes, hi. Hi so much. Thank you so much, Barry, for joining us this morning. I was hoping that maybe you could help us with starting out with the why. Why is it that there's so much stress and so much conflict during the holidays, and what proactive things that we might be able to do to make it a more peaceful time?
Sure. Well, first of all, I just want to thank everyone, Sam and Linda, for inviting me back. And it's always a pleasure to chat here, and especially looking forward to talking with the callers to bring in some personal perspectives and experience and wisdom from different life situations. Why do we have stress over the holidays? Well, I don't know. We have bright expectations for how great the holiday season is going to be during the darkest days of the year, the shortest, darkest days. And we want to be happy and bright. And immediately we have this kind of dynamic which causes us to raise our stress levels. So I did a little poking around, and I made a short list here of why the holidays are stressful. So maybe we'll just start off by warming us up with thinking about this out loud together. Why should we be stressed over the holidays? Well, the holidays implies that we have expectations to get together with family and have a joyful season, family gatherings, receiving gifts, and so on. Yet for many people, it's a season of isolation and loneliness. There's reminders of people who have passed in the family or loved ones. So there's, on the emotional side, there's grief and sadness, loss, feelings of sorrow or disappointments. But aside from the emotional, personal circumstances, just the setup of the holidays, the expectation goes along with trying to get the house ready for a holiday party or social gatherings. And if you're not hosting one, you may be preparing to go to one and needing to travel. And the situation of traveling alone brings lots of stress. Then there's the issue of maybe having a friend or a family member stay over, whether they're traveling at long distance or just because of the amount of alcohol that may be served that evening. And so the planning and expectation increases the stress level there. Maybe people want to avoid the holiday and just plan on a vacation to get out of town. So think about the holiday travel stress that goes along with preparing for airport travel and hotels and the expense involved with planning. Then there's the lack of time. We have a short window, usually somewhere around Thanksgiving to Christmas, to buy Christmas trees and get the decorations out and clean up the house and then do all the shopping, which used to be running around to the mall. Now it's poking around for hours on Amazon and other places online to try to figure out who's going to get what and how to get it delivered on time. All the pressure that some people may feel because of their employment and work, because they're going to take some time off. They have some deadlines to meet at the last minute on top of all the other home family stress that's going on. Then add to that finances and money. On average, people spend perhaps $1,000 or more over the holidays just with all the expenses, increased expenses. And so it's a stressful time financially if you don't have that money in reserve or you're putting it on credit cards. That doesn't help any. So on and on and on, the over-commercialization of Christmas that sort of dampens or weakens or takes the genuine sincere feelings of heartfelt, loving, caring connections with people away by turning it into commercials and sales pitches. The pressure of gift-giving, having to figure out what to get for who and make sure that all the politics in the family are addressed with equivalent amounts of how much you spend on who. Do you spend the same on Uncle John as you do with Aunt Mary? And so on. And of course, that all leads to our topic that we're heading towards in this hour here about family conflicts that arise with all of that.
Yeah, but, Barry, I could just want to put out the obvious overlay here, which is the pandemic. I wonder if that could be good for some families who haven't been together now for 2 years or heighten some of the issues that come up. And I'm thinking of my own family because we're going to gather this holiday, the Christmas holiday, for the first time in 2 years. And on one hand, it'll be the first time everybody's together in person, and that's, I think that should make the positive feelings more intense. But it also, having been apart for longer than usual, I wonder if that will change how we deal with other issues that might not be as warm and fuzzy. You know what I'm saying?
It certainly raises the bar for anticipating what to expect. And the problem is with COVID, we just don't know from day to day what to expect. We turn on the news, of course, everyone does, and tries to follow what's going on or listening to whatever sources you might care to listen to. And it doesn't bring us any comfort and relief. It brings more questions than it has answers.
Yeah. And Linda, I want to bring you into the conversation, but want to remind our listeners that it is a call-in program. If you'd like to talk about any issues you're struggling with this holiday season, conflicts with family members, other points of stress, how you've dealt with it, or if you're looking for some ideas on how to deal with it, we invite you to join our conversation. The number is 303-442-4242. That's 303-442-4242. Linda?
Thank you. So hearing you talk about, both of you talk about the overlay of COVID and the extra anticipation for some of our families, mine too, Sam, that we too are for the first time in a few years meeting together, and there's already conflict, honestly, in our family right now. And so my question for you, Barry, is I know that you have a great focus on mindfulness practices and things like that. And I'm wondering if you can help, along with our listeners, how to proactively, even now before we are together, what are things that we can do to help us either distract or heighten the focus or calm us down?
Sure. Maybe this whole program can be devoted towards how to deal with the issues of COVID and family. But let's see, as callers call in, where we go. But right off the bat, I've been talking about this frequently during my days with clients. It seems to me that immediately we need to start to differentiate between the increasing stress levels and how increasing stress levels leads to conflict. It's a process that quickly takes over. when stress increases in our nervous system. I'd like to get to that maybe in a few minutes and come back to that. But generally speaking, just to begin the conversation about COVID, there's a tendency in our minds to want to convince or change other people's minds about you and sort of sway them over to your side of the fence. And if you're overprotective and had gotten your vaccines and now your booster and wearing masks, and there's a family member who hasn't been vaccinated or gotten the booster shot or is sort of blasé about it or up the ante, feels it's a conspiracy, there's no reason to be concerned about the hype about this COVID business, it's no big deal. I talk to people out of state where it's common for no one to wear masks and for everyone to get COVID and to survive, they think. But there's sort of an avoidance of the facing the harsh realities of how many people have been seriously affected in health compromise and also death. So the first words of wisdom here, my few 2 cents worth of wisdom, is take a look at why we want to convince someone else and try to change their minds when it's so hard for us to make changes ourselves. What success do we have in our own ability to make personal changes, and what kind of success do we have in using logic to try to sway someone over when it's all an emotional-based kind of affair that's going on in our biological nervous system? Let me pause there and just get some feedback from either of you. Is that something that you guys relate to in terms of convincing people to change their minds?
Oh, for sure. From a logical perspective, I think most of us think, oh yeah, I can convince them by this logic, and of course it's emotional. And to be honest, COVID is not as much an issue in my family, so I can't respond to that for the holidays from my own perspective. But from other kinds of conflicts, my question is, what can we do proactively? What are tips, maybe mindfulness tips or ways that we can calm ourselves down even before we get with our families?
Excellent question. Okay, so where to jump in here? So we have this big pimple on the top of our shoulders, our brains, our heads. And I like to think of it as it's kind of a forest fire lookout tower that sits on the top of our structure. And our biologically, through evolution, through gazillion generations of ancestors, our biology sets us up to be on the lookout for danger and threat. And it's, you think about it, 4 of the 5 senses are up in this big pimple, seeing and smelling and tasting and hearing. So we're always, whether it's conscious or unconscious, we're alert to looking for danger. And when that alarm goes off, when we see something that we're not quite comfortable with, that's different from what we are usually feel safe about, it sets off a myriad of many, many different biological systems that start to react and respond and adjust. The primary ones that we like to quote is the cortisol and adrenaline reaction. It's kind of like when you're driving on the highway and someone cuts you off and you feel that immediate rush through your body, that adrenaline rush. And so just to be brief about this, when that adrenaline comes in, our body is designed for the blood to leave our brains and go into our muscles. So how are you going to talk to anybody and get them to hear what you have to say when our brains aren't very clear? The fight-flight-freeze reactivity is now lit up, and we're quick to have to defend ourselves, usually by arguing or yelling, that adrenaline in our bloodstream now is making us animated and possibly aggressive and ready to fight back. Or it goes into the other set of muscles where we want to take off and run as fast as we can to get out of there so we avoid the danger. And if that neither of those work, then we might possibly go into freeze. We lie down and play dead and hope that no one will notice us. So we start to deny or avoid or just numb out and make believe there's no conflict. But inside, we're just sort of frozen inside. So we have this kind of nervous system reaction, and that's where conflict comes into play, because now your nervous system and possibly the other person you have a conflict with are both lit up. Nobody's thinking clearly because the blood is in the muscles. And by the way, it also, in that reaction, it shuts down your immune system. Because if you're just about to die, your body doesn't need to provide any immunity. The number one defense is how to protect yourself so you can feel safe again. So that's why when people are stressed for long periods of time, they begin ill. They have medical issues. The weakest link becomes a flare-up. And we have medical issues, disease, and so on. So back to your question, now that I've set up, you know, what the dilemma is really our mission for ourselves and perhaps in influencing others that we're with is how to calm our own nervous system. What can we do to reverse that reactivity and change it into a response rather than a reaction? So there's a few secret hints from Heloise here that I want to share, and that has to do with the importance of breathing, because there's three parts in the body, three mechanisms in the body that are on automatic pilot, but you also have full control over. And one of them is breathing. When you're on the phone, when you're asleep, when you're talking, we're not aware of our breathing. Our breathing happens automatically. But at any given time, we can take over our breathing. We can hold our breath. We can shift our breathing. We can take deep breaths. And that's the key. So one of the hints of Heloise here is to take some deep breaths, because when you're stress reaction goes off, the stress alarm goes off, your breathing becomes high in your chest and shallow. We start to breathe as if a wild animal is chasing us and we have to get away. We don't recognize it, but our breathing pattern shifts immediately, faster than we can think. So by going to manual mode and taking some deep belly breaths, shifting your breathing from where you're breathing, up high in your chest, to down in your belly, and slowing down your breathing is a way of turning off the cortisol and the adrenaline. That's so important. That's key. It's a secret to reducing anxiety, panic attacks. It's a secret to reducing the stress reaction. It's a secret to beginning to heal any kind of mental condition we have, is focusing on our breathing by allowing our nervous systems to return back to its homeostasis.
And we're going to pause there, take a deep breath. And remind listeners that this is a call-in program. We welcome your participation in the conversation. We're at 303-442-4242. We're talking with Boulder psychotherapist Barry Erdman. Linda Newell, my co-host for these conflict resolution call-ins, is with us on the phone. And if there's a conflict you've been dealing with around the holidays, or advice you have, something that's worked for you, maybe it is breathing, we invite you to share it and perhaps pose a question or share an experience with our guest this morning, 303-442-4242. So remember to breathe and breathe deep, Barry.
Okay.
No, it's good. No, I mean, I actually try to remember to do that when I find myself getting in a situation that's triggering my stress levels.
Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, it just this morning, I woke up 2 hours before I needed to wake up out of stress from, honestly, conflict in my own situation around the holidays, and focused on my breathing. But one of the things I wanted to ask you about was visualization. and how that can help in those moments as well.
Okay, that's a good one. If we're focusing on self-regulating, we use that term carefully, self-regulating, we want to be able to, remember those old silent movies where the guy jumps out of the old steam engine train and then pulls the train track switch and switches the train so it goes off to the different track. So when our nervous system's lit up, we have this sympathetic reaction. And what we can do to change train tracks, so to speak, in the metaphor, is to think about building a different neural pathway. That's a popular term that you hear nowadays. So switching the train tracks to a different neural pathway is intentionally changing our focus of attention to things that bring a different emotional response. Just like listening to different kinds of music causes a different reaction on our brains and nervous system to put us in a different mood. It could be calming, it could be dance music. The same with visualizations. So just by unhooking from the trauma or the trigger that we are seeing in our line of sight or in our imagination that threatens us, we can switch train tracks, so to speak, to a picture, an image that brings a different kind of effect. So in the old days, in the humanistic psychology movement and in the 60s and 70s, we do these visualization exercises, group guided imagery, guided fantasy, kind of leading people into their safety places or their an imaginary cloud or castle where you can walk through and feel safe and secure. So those visualizations is an important part. It's a part of our brain, the visual part of our brain, where we register responses, and by purposely being aware of where our attention goes and then taking charge and taking some responsibility for what we're allowing ourselves to be influenced by can make a big difference.
Let's take a call. This is Dee from Denver. Hi, Dee. You're on the air.
I wanted to share an idea that's kind of helped with our family. We were a family of many children, and of course all those children had diverse ideas on many things, which in the past had caused conflicts when we gathered. So there were books that my mother had saved over the years that had happy stories, recipes, tips on how to do things. And what I did at Thanksgiving this year was pass around the books, and each one got a book, and they could just open it up to whatever and then read it out loud and share it with the others. And some of them were poems, some of them were recipes and things like this, and they all had a good time. There was no conflict. So if the person who's given the party has some ideas on how to basically focus the event on happiness and have things there where the focus remains there instead of wandering to topics where people used to argue and fight and quarrel, I think the stress level of everybody is joyful, remains joyful, and is removed.
Well, thanks, Dee.
I like that suggestion so much, and here's the reason why. If we're getting together with relatives or family members that we don't often see or interact with, we have this kind of intuition that we share genes, that we have some things that are similar. However, when this big pimple looks at our differences, we notice how we have different beliefs or religious beliefs or different positions about COVID, as we mentioned before. We tend to get disconnected from people, and we start to see them as a threat or an enemy, as we talked about, and it raises that stress level and creates the conflict. So just think about this idea of passing around a book where everyone joins together in a kind of a ritualistic kind of way of sharing things that are bring good feelings together. It brings back the common denominator that reminds us that we're all connected, that we all are of the same kind of body.
Let's take another call. This is Amy from Boulder. Hi, Amy. You're on the air. Amy.
Hi. So I really appreciate this conversation, and I have a question going back to the response to stress by taking deep breaths, and I recognize this is really about, you know, helping ourselves, but my question is a hard one. If I am with somebody who I'm very close to, say my family, and I see that they're triggered, or maybe even I've triggered them, and they're having this kind of response, and I've seen this very clearly, and they need to take a breath and try to help themselves, what can I do besides regulating myself? You know, because I find if you say to someone in this situation, you know, take some deep breaths, usually it just makes it worse. So how can I help myself and help my near loved ones when they're so stressed out and triggered?
Thanks for that question. I appreciate that. I'll take a shot at that. You know, one of the things that we want to do immediately is help and give advice and try to help someone who we feel needs help, whether they think they need help or not. And what we forget about is, instead of telling people what we want them to do or what we think might be best for them, what might be more effective is listening. And listening in a way that we can hear what is going on with them. You don't really have to do anything more than be able to just be present and validate and to recognize that you can show your support by being secure, an object of security. You can provide a sense of safety because you're inquiring. It's like, oh, what's going on right now? Can you? I realize that you reacted to something I said, or can we just take a time out here, just go in the other room a minute? Tell me what's happening. So just being able to open our ears, and instead of trying to rescue or change or try to accommodate, or how can we show up?
Well, what about in that situation that Amy is describing, saying, you know, I'm feeling a little anxious. I'm just going to take a breath here. Saying, so I'm doing that. I'm not putting it on you, like, take a breath, you know, and then the person gets more defensive, but I'm going to do that. And then maybe that influences the other person to do what we'd like them to do, but we're unclear about how to suggest that to them.
Of course, and we do that all the time. We'd like to think we do that all the time when we're good parents. Our kids are acting out. They're upset. They're onto something. So how do we role model the state that we'd like to lead them to? It's called pacing and leading. You start with connecting with the person, and then begin to change how you are. And once you have that connection, they begin to shift as you shift.
I hope that's helpful, Amy. Thanks for your call.
Thank you so much. Those responses were really helpful.
We're at 303-442-4242 if you'd like to join our conversation here. It's 1 minute after 9 o'clock at listener-supported KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. We're talking about how, with the framework of the holidays, how we can manage conflict within our families and with our loved ones. I'm Sam Fuqua. Co-host Linda Newell is with us by phone, and Barry Erdman, a psychotherapist in Boulder, is with us as our expert guest this morning. Again, the number to join the conversation is 303-442-4242. Linda?
Yes, you had mentioned parents and children. And speaking of that, I'm wondering if you can give us any tips for when, and especially with all of the stuff going on, how children can sometimes act out what's not being expressed in the room. You know, they can pick that up and start to express it, and sometimes get into conflict with their parents. So as a parent, what can you do with a child, parent-child conflict, without escalating the conflict?
Well, the rules to being a good parent and providing good parenting skills still applies here, whether it's around the holidays or any other time of the year. So if the kids are acting out, chances are your nervous system is acting out too. And either you're trying to figure out how to outsmart them or come up with some disciplining, or how many times do we know of this example where parents are screaming, "Stop screaming!" and so we don't realize what it is that we're doing that's contributing or escalating the situation. So I like Sam's suggestion about stopping to take our own deep breaths and pausing for a minute. Breathing, taking timeouts. We think of timeouts as we needed to impose this as a punishment on the kids, depending on what age they are, because they're out of line and they need some kind of consequence. But we don't think about taking our own timeouts. How do we take a breath and then come back and address what's needed? Sometimes we've really royally screwed up ourselves. How do we handle dealing with our own feelings and share that with our kids so we set a good role model for how to deal with feelings, even when you got angry or frustrated or maybe you threw something across the room, to sit down with the child when you caught your breath and say, "Hey, I was really off there. I shouldn't have done that. I'm really sorry if I scared you." And seek how to make a connection. When there's that conflict and that stress going on between parents and children, there's this disconnect. That's the theme. And the healing process, or coming back to a healthy relationship, yeah, has to do with that connection. And one more addition to this is it all has to do with heart. To take a deep breath, to get out of your head, where you're trying to figure it out, and to sink into a place inside your belly, to find a small smiling sensation, a spot deep inside that enables you to begin to relax and to get connected. That's the key here in many, many situations, including parenting, that makes the difference.
Can I ask both of you about a subset of the parent-child conflict, which is the gift expectations and managing gifts? And so I'm talking about young children, not adult children here, but and kids will hear their peers when they're playing talking about, "Oh, this is what I'm gonna get," or, "You know, I got this awesome thing and you didn't get it," or something. How did you manage that as parents, either of you? Because I know you both have children, adult children now, but I'm sure you can look back on those days of the gifts and perhaps offer some advice on how we can approach that particular piece of the holidays with children in a way that, you know, moves away from, you know, some of the bad tendencies that are there, you know, greed and consumerism and jealousy and all these things that something as silly as a toy can manifest for a kid. You know what I'm saying, Barry?
I wish we could call my daughter on the phone here and get her on the line.
Well, give me your number.
So one thing we did is, especially when money is tight and you can't really afford all those expensive presents that all the other kids might be getting and they want, I went into my daughter's room and looked for all the things she never plays with that I gave her in the past that are tucked away in the closets or on the shelves. And took a lot of time to rewrap them, to put them in new boxes and wrapping paper. And we had this huge pile of presents under the tree, our Jewish Christmas tree. And the ritual of opening presents was the key. Like, "Oh, shake that box. What do you think's in there? Is that something for you? Or what do you think it is? Is that something that you want? Is that something you already know about?" You know, so we start to make it a fun, kind of playful, just the opening presents part was the joy, was the gift. And they'd open up and they'd say, "Oh, I know this. This is so familiar."
Wouldn't they be disappointed? Like, "Oh, I already have this."
I have two of them now, right? So we just turn it into a little joke and comedy. And of course, hidden in there in the pile of packages are some things that we know that she wanted, or... How about you, Linda? Do you have some...
Yeah, I love that, Barry. I love that idea. I never did that, but I love that idea. Because of the framework of my family, I, with my kids, had, when that had happened occasionally, because we were usually the middle of the road family, so, but we were in school districts that were more wealthy, and so that jealousy would happen, and the whole consumerism, to Sam's point, would pop up. But what we talked about in our home was the importance of the meaning of Christmas and Hanukkah, and because we're a Chrismica family, and so we focused on that, and then we also focused on the world and outside of America, outside of our own community, and we would tell stories about other kids who didn't have anything, and actually some years we didn't have anything, but talking about how that doesn't show the value of who we are as a family, and that we have each other, and we focused on the love and the compassion that we have for each other, not necessarily the things.
We're talking about different aspects of the holidays and the conflicts that can arise. If you have maybe you'd like to offer a suggestion on how you've dealt with gift giving in your family, or you're perhaps anticipating a conflict during your holiday gathering with a family member, we invite you to join the conversation and share what's going on with you, or perhaps what's worked in the past for you at potentially conflictual holiday gatherings. Our number is 303-442-4242, 303-442-4242. Linda, didn't mean to cut you off, just wanted to remind folks of the phone number.
Not at all. I do have a question, Barry. Because we do have some families right now that are fractured, either from COVID, either from politics, or whatever, conflicts in relationships, who cannot be together in the same room, have chosen not to be together. And so some families are now having separate celebrations and separate Christmas openings. And how do you manage that when you are one of the people in the family who wants to be at all of them and wants to have relationships with all of the family members, but it's not possible? So how do you deal with those kinds of conflicts when you can't be in the same room together?
That's a good one. We're living in these times where that's more of the protocol, isn't it? With restrictions or limitations to travel due to COVID. Some people ignore those. The technology of Zoom, of course, has provided a way for people to gather at long distances and still feel the emotional benefits and the connection, being able to see your loved ones, even though you can't be with them. It's certainly not the same as being in the room with someone. But again, it's that inner feeling that we keep in our bellies and in our hearts that seals the deal. And so when you think about, as we think out loud together here, to consider what is it that brings fulfillment inside of our experience, it has to do with connecting with others, as I mentioned. But it also has something to do with dropping into a place of compassion in ourselves, a place where we can be present in such a way that we can feel that kind of genetic or familial connection that we hold inside our memories. When we have a flood or a flashback of people that we spent time with in the past and we'd like to see them again, it's those kinds of neural pathways that we're generating inside ourselves that are stored somewhere inside of ourselves, maybe not necessarily all in our brain, but in our muscles or other places. So those images, those memories are flooding through our system. So to be able to be on a Zoom or on a phone call, or even in an old-fashioned way of writing a card or a letter, to remind ourselves and maybe make references to those things that help us to feel connected with those loved ones or those special moments, is a sharing that also provides a stimulus in a positive way to the person on the other end.
We're at 303-442-4242 if you'd like to join our conversation, talking about holiday conflicts, issues that come up. Maybe you've got an issue or you've got something that's worked. Dee shared a really nice idea earlier in the conversation about how to keep a holiday gathering positive. We're interested in what's worked for you as well as what you might be struggling with. 303-442-4242 is the number to call. And with couples, Barry, couples who are together, not couples who have separated, but, you know, for whom holidays may trigger some of their worst tendencies. Are there preventative measures that we can take to avoid conflict? Like, okay, we're going to this family gathering and, you know, I know how you're going to be at this and don't be that way, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. All right.
Not that I have any experience with this.
I wonder why you brought that one up. So one thing that I found that people have reported that has been helpful is before the event, instead of pointing out what brings that anxiety and fear and threat about what's going to happen, you kind of conspire in a different way to say, you know, when we're at this gathering, let's create a hand signal or some kind of signal to say that I love you across the room. Or instead of that familiar kick under the table, can it be a wink, or can it be a thumbs up, or if need be, can I talk to you for a minute and then go in the other room and just sit and hold hands or make some physical contact? Because what you want to keep established is that connection of while you're a couple, while you're together. We're so often thrown off because of what so-and-so said. You said this, you said that. I was upset by that and triggered by that. So we want to try to address it, because if we bring it to the other person's attention, it'll fix it. Well, that doesn't fix it. What fixes it is that heartfelt kind of caring, loving, compassionate gesture that brings everything back into the reason why you're actually with that person.
Thanks for that. Linda?
Yeah, I love that idea. Yes, a question. There are times, of course, during the holidays where the separated or the divorced parents are arguing over the child, and sometimes literally standing over them arguing as they drop off the kid. My question about that is, what are tips that you can give for parents who are no longer together, but they still have these children that they are responsible for, role modeling for? What are tips that you can give them to keep those conflicts at bay?
Excellent. Years ago, I used to teach one of those required classes on parenting for divorce that you have to go through before your divorce is finalized. And one of the important themes of that class, and it applies here, is the importance of remembering what the child's needs are. When we're in conflict with our exes, we get triggered, and all the anger and resentment and the past conflicts that remain unresolved are still in our nervous system, and we don't know how to self-regulate or manage it. We totally forget that the child's needs are different than the agenda, the politics of what's going on in the conflict between the two parents that have discord. So oftentimes the arguments, as some of you and your listeners may remember or know about, is, I want equal time. You're going to have the kid on Christmas Eve. Well, I want him on Christmas Eve. I don't want Christmas Day because blah, blah, blah. And then it's a debate about who's getting the upper hand, who's at the advantage. Why should I have to give in because they have holiday plans and I don't? And they want the kids and I can't have them. all that seemingly unresolvable stress is just escalating and creating that extreme conflict in high conflict families that seems to never want to go away. But the important tidbit here is your whole mission is to help these kids have a thriving, hopefully happy, successful life. And what you're role modeling over the fighting over the kids is creating an opportunity then for them to be in therapy for the rest of their lives. The trauma and stress that you're creating by demonstrating that conflict, even if they're not in view, even if it's on the phone and the kids are asleep, the vibes that when they're around you, they can pick up the tension. They don't feel safe and secure because you're carrying that conflict inside of you. So the short answer, to summarize, is what is it that's going to remain in your kids' consciousness, in their awareness? Mm. It's that feeling of safety. It's that feeling of being protected. And ultimately, what we all still strive for is that sense of unconditional love. When we put our kids' needs first and recognize it's not quantity time, but quality time. So if you just have a half hour before you drop the kids off to the other spouse that you're in conflict with, how to be able to make that beautiful heart-loving connection and wish them to have a great time with their other parent, and you'll be thinking about them, and I look forward to hearing how it went. It's so hard to go there when you're focused on the unfairness of the inequities of the conflict. But the child is going to remember you because of the last thing you say before you drop them off. They're going to remember mm-hmm. you. That's the memory that they keep. So if you even have a bit of tension or adversarial kind of conflict inside of you, the kids don't feel safe, and they're going to be a little, have a little trepidation when you get them back again because the last thing they remember was that tension.
Boulder psychotherapist Barry Erdman is our guest this morning as we talk about different types of conflicts that can arise over the holidays, whether between parents, parent-child, within families, as we perhaps many of us anticipate holiday gatherings or just got through holiday gatherings that perhaps created some conflict. If you would like to pose a question or share something that's worked with our expert guest this morning, please call us at 303-442-4242. That's 303-442-4242. We got time to take a couple more calls this morning. And shifting back maybe from that, I think what can be a very deep source of conflict to the political conflicts that can arise within families. And I know at my upcoming family gathering, my one sibling is probably going to start talking about certain political situations in a way that I will react to, and I want to engage him in a productive conversation and not get into a big argument. And so I mentally prepared for that because it's happened before. But Barry, are there tips or tricks or approaches that can help as we may have family members who are in a completely opposite place politically than we are, whether it's COVID or, you know, the national politics or whatever?
I'll share a secret therapist trick that nobody should repeat, and you didn't hear it from me.
Okay, great. We're on the radio.
There's nobody else listening, right? So the last thing we want to do when we're talking to someone like that is to hear them out. We don't want to really hear this anymore. We know what they're going to say. We're already preparing our rebuttal. We're going to argue. We've stopped listening. And the therapist's secret is to say, "Oh, that's interesting. Can you tell me more about that? Help me understand how it is that you've come to that understanding, that belief, that justification." So with politics, oh, it's so divided. Have we ever been in a worse situation than we have been post what's his name, Trump? Well, we don't need to find any worse examples. our whole context right now is us and them, and our struggle is what do we do when there's us and them? We're not all in this together. We're no longer on the same team. What happens when you're in a sporting event and your loved one is rooting for the other side, the other team, because they came from a different state where that was their team?
But you say hear them out. In fact, encourage them to say more about why they hold
this is,
that particular
This is where belief. Taking that deep breath comes in handy. You take the deep breath and say, okay, he's not going to listen to me, and I'm not listening to him, so how's this going to go? So someone has to start this first. So if you turn on the switch and say, okay, let me find a way to tolerate, take a deep breath, and encourage him or her to talk, to be able to listen and not react, not respond, not have to do anything but to validate. Oh, thank you so much. I didn't realize that that's how you felt. Or, well, that makes a little bit more sense to me. I may not exactly agree with all that you said, but I really appreciate you taking the time to lay it out for me.
Well, thanks. That's Barry Erdman. Let's hear from Diane now in Boulder. Hi, Diane. You're with us this morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to share something about when your child isn't receiving the tremendous gift someone else might be getting. We were in a wealthy school district, and we're not among the wealthy people, though my son had a lot of friends in that circle. Then he was about 13, and he was ready to go back to school the next day after Christmas break. And he said, well, you know, one of the things I'm not looking forward to going back tomorrow. And I said, what's that? And he said, well, everybody will just be talking about everything they got for Christmas. And I only have one thing. I got new skis, and I like them, but I won't have anything like the number of things to talk about that everybody else had. And kind of looked at me like, what should I do with this? And I didn't have a ready response. I felt like we'd had a good Christmas. And yet I could see it was the adolescent in him wanting to be part of the group and all. And we just stood there a minute, and then I said, well, you could lie. And we both stood there another minute, and I could see him considering whether it would be worth his integrity to lie about what he got for Christmas. And he smiled and said, yeah. And then it was okay. I guess he decided that what he got was okay, and he was okay, and that was all right. So I think helping people that age particularly come back to who they are and what matters for them is really important in our materialistic culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's all I have.
What a gem that is.
Thanks a lot, Diane.
Oh, that's so beautiful. You know, we so want to seek out answers. And sometimes our answers are inside ourselves. And as a parent, to guide a child to look at their own value system and what is inherent inside of them is helping them to develop. Yeah. That's so beautiful.
She's like Socrates, Diane. There. Good, right? good mom. That was great. Thank you for that. And I don't know if we're running pretty short of time here. Maybe as we wind down, Barry Erdman, we of course want to let people know how they can get in touch with you if they want to follow up, but maybe you can bring us back to where we started with some of the fundamental things. One of them, of course, is the deep belly breaths, which I know helped me in a variety of situations, and we can't emphasize mm-hmm. that enough, but other sort of things to keep top of mind here?
Well, there's one last thing to share. We all know about the three R's, reading, writing, arithmetic. I want to share the three N's, the letter N in the alphabet. And the three N's, this might be a good way to remember this. The three N's stand for notice. Notice what is triggering you, or notice what you're triggered by, or how your nervous system's reacting. And then name or label what it is that's going on, so that you are able to identify the triggering and the situation, so you'll be able to do something about it. And the last N is nurture, which goes back to that heart-centered, body-centered kind of place where the solution or resolution lies. So notice and name and nurture to bring us back on track.
Notice, name, and nurture. That's Barry Erdman, who is a psychotherapist in Boulder, licensed clinical social worker. He's been working with adults, couples, and families for 35 years and been on the program before, always bringing some helpful suggestions. Thank you, Barry, for your time this morning.
Thank you for inviting me, Sam and Linda.
Co-host Linda Newell, former State Senator Linda Newell. It's great to talk with you as always, Linda.
Thank you. Can you just, if you're interested in Barry Erdman, you can go to BoulderTherapist.com.
That's right. That is his website, BoulderTherapist.com. And Linda, any final thoughts?
Just say I, of course, want to thank you so much. And I think that that's so helpful, Barry, with the three N's. And remembering that we can absolutely change our neural pathway by changing our train track. I think that that's so helpful to visualize in our heads. and thank you. I think you've definitely helped me before our holidays here.
Oh, I'm so grateful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and however you're celebrating, whether it's Christmas or Kwanzaa, maybe you just celebrated the solstice or Hanukkah earlier this month, we do want to wish you all, a happy holiday and as conflict-free as possible. I guess we're not talking about avoiding conflict here. Sometimes that's a strategy, right? But more than that, how we manage it when it happens and how we kind of prepare when we know there's going to be a conflict, as there often are during some holiday gatherings. So, Barry Erdman, thanks again. Linda, thank you. Have a good holiday to you both. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
you
so
too.
Much. Be well, everyone.
29 minutes after 9 o'clock, you're in tune with listener-supported KGNU. Brian is here to bring you a fabulous edition of the Morning Sound Alternative. Stay tuned.
Folk music has always played an essential role in storytelling the American experience. Join us every Thursday night at 7 p.m. for Highway 322, an hour of folk music and Americana, where you'll hear the musical expressions of the common folk here in America. You'll be treated to an eclectic hootenanny of roots, acoustic, protest, folk revival, new folk, and so much more. That's Highway 322. Every Thursday night from 7 to 8 p.m. on your radio station, KGNU.
Feel like dancing? KGNU's got you covered every Thursday night with classic big band and swing tunes, plus modern favorites sure to make you jump, jive, and wail. It's The Swing Shift, every Thursday from 9 to 10 here on KGNU.
Jack and Jill went up the hill to get a pail. Jack and Jill went up the hill to get a pail.
Good morning and welcome to the Morning Sound Alternative. My name's Brian, coming at you from the Boulder studio. Gonna be playing music for you here till 12 o'clock today. Got all kinds of holiday tunes mixed in with some of my favorites in the worldly folk pop genres as well. We're gonna kind of do a little countdown of my top 10 favorite albums of 2021. Also got some pairs of tickets to give away. Some really good ones, actually. We're going to be giving away a pair of tickets to see Railroad Earth here sometime in the first hour. And then I have a pair of tickets to see My Morning Jacket as well sometime after 11 o'clock. Make sure you stick around for all that. My name's Brian. Coming at you from the Boulder studio. If you want to connect, you can shoot me an email to dj@kgnu.org. This is the Morning Sound Alternative on listener-supported KGNU. Thank you.
These are days of disarray, and they are golden. They hold a bitter taste, but sweetness lies within them. These days pass and slowly, thick like honey. These days when the heart is heavy with hearsay of